High atop the hidden bunker in the Rocky Mountains, it's time for Downrange Radio and your host, Michael Bain.
Yeehaw! I heard somebody say burn, baby, burn. Disco Inferno. Fire? 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 Okay, okay. When was the last time you heard Disco Inferno? That, of course, is the great and leggy Tina Turner's version. Welcome to Downrange Radio, where you can hear somebody say, bang, baby, bang. Well, anyway, I am your host, Michael Bain. I bet you knew that already, though. And Downrange Radio is the audio podcast incarnation of Downrange Television, powered by the Outdoor Channel. And, wow, yeah, I hadn't heard that in a long time. It's been a long time since I heard any disco song. I got to tell you, I lived in New York City and was a rock critic in the mid-70s, right at the height of disco. So, oh, gosh, what can I say? I never went to a disco. I never owned a white suit. I can say that. I never owned a John Travolta white suit. And I'm proud of that. I'm proud that I managed to live in New York City at the height of disco and never once go to Brooklyn to any of those disco places because it was just too scary. So, but, you know, we're not talking about disco today. Well, not that much anyway. Well, as usual, we're going to talk about guns, which is what you guys are here for, certainly what I'm here for. And the first thing I want, what is the first thing I want to talk about today? Well, I've got a present for you. Well, not for all of you. I wish I had a present for all of you, but I don't. But I've got a really nice present for one of you. That's right. It's been a while since Downrange Television cranked up any of its giveaways, and that's because Marshall Holloway and I have had so much going on that we haven't quite kept up with it. But we've got a giveaway for you that's coming up next week that's going to make you happy puppies. What have we got doing? Like, oh, what's he got? It's like Christmas. What's he's got? How about an FNH FNAR 7.62 Super Deluxe rifle? That's right. You want one, they are darned expensive. Darned expensive. But the FNARs, they're basically, it is a militarized version of the venerable Browning BAR. That's not the BAR like used in World War II, but the BAR hunting gun. Certainly you're all familiar with it. A few years back, FNH decided to militarize that gun. That's because a lot of the super secret spooky guys were actually using Browning BARs. that they had bought commercially. They were using them over in the sandbox. And if I told you who and I told you where, I'd have to kill you, right? You already know how that song goes. But FNH decided to sit down and militarize that gun, make an effort to militarize it, beef it up, and they succeeded beyond anybody's wildest expectations. We filmed the FNH Midwestern 3 guns for Shooting Gallery for 2010, and I had a chance, I think I mentioned this like months ago, I don't know, I had a chance to talk to Dave Anderson from American Handgunner Magazine, old friend of mine, another gun writer, and he had actually shot the match with an FNAR 7.62 rifle that had been loaned to him, and I said, hey, you know, what's it like, dog, how'd it work? And he goes, whoa, he said, it worked to the tune of less than MOA at 100 yards out of the box, no problemo. So shooting sub-1-inch groups out of the box with the gun, I mean, obviously the Browning BAR platform has been around for a long time. It's a rock-solid hunting platform. But the FNAR, the militarized version, you're going to want it really bad. And we're going to be giving it away on Downrange Television. The giveaway starts next week, so you'll be able to sign up next week. We'll have some video stuff with the gun. We'll show you all the gun porn. We'll let you look at the gun and go, oh, I want that gun so badly. I need that gun. I need to sign up to win that gun. And I need to send Michael Bain $50 just to guarantee that my... No. However, I think most of you already know this, but members of the Downrange forums, the DRTV forums, and a member is defined by somebody who signs up and posts at least once, are automatically entered twice in the giveaway. So you have a choice. You can, if you hear this, you say, oh, I want to enter for that rifle. Well, the easiest thing to do is to enter. The easiest way to enter is to become a member of the Downrange forums, which are really good. I mean, we have absolutely some of the best gun forums on the internet and some of the smartest, most articulate people on the internet, and no trolls. No trolls allowed on Downrange, okay? Sign up for Downrange, post once, and we will enter you twice in the giveaway of the FNH FNAR 7.62 rifle. You want it bad. You're going like, wow, I always wanted a major caliber battle rifle. So I want one. So since I want one, I figure you guys want one as well. So check out the videos next week, see what you need to find out about it. And, you know, I just might make a call to, I don't know, Leupold? Gosh, call my friend Pat Mundy at Leupold and say, oh, you know, Pat, we're giving away this FNAR, and it sure looked good with a Leupold scope on it. And I bet one of those just might materialize. So check it out next week. Check out the video. Sign up. And, hey, it's great to be back in the giveaway business because I really like that. It's fun to give away guns. It'd be more fun if I could give them away to myself. But that's just, I don't know, how you say, inappropriate. So anyway, that's the big news for this week of kind of getting us cranked up. What else is going on? Not too much. Not too much is going on. We are sliding toward the end of the year, and gosh, a lot of, you know, I expect to see a lot of things before SHOT. I expect to be able to tap into a lot of new product that's going to be available before SHOT. But right now, we're still betwixt and between. I was talking today to Para USA about their 5.56, their tactical rifle. Tactical. If I say it 11 more times, it's my word, and I get to use it all the time. Tactical. Never heard that before, and I bet you haven't either. I was talking about their 5.56 tactical rifle, and they're like, well, why haven't you shot one? Because you haven't sent me one. They're like, oops. So that's going to be coming in the mail next couple of 3 weeks. And Alzita, cool guy, good friend of mine from the old days. So I'm looking forward to shooting any gun that's based on his design there, his impingement or whatever it is. It's all strange, and Al will explain everything to me before I actually shoot the gun so I can explain it to you. So that baby's going to be coming in the mail. Looking around to see what else is coming. From my friends at Tactical Solutions, there's another .22 conversion unit coming very soon. You'll see it, of course, first on Downrange Television. Surprise! And it's going to be a conversion, a .22 conversion unit for one of those, what do they call it? Glocks. I don't know. I don't remember. Anyway, a lot of demand for that because, you know, again, ammunition's still expensive. Although, you know, I recently read in some of the mainstream media, and one day I read that ammunition is just gone, baby, gone, baby, gone, which we all knew. And then about 3 days later, I read that the ammunition shortage was loosening up. And I thought, okay, well, where? Actually, it is. I ran a couple of checks a few days ago. And more is available, but, I'm not seeing a huge lot of price drops. 5.56 is down for the Russian ammo, for like the Wolf, stuff like that. Some of the Serbian, is that right? Some of the Aprici, looking at the prices a little bit better on that. So there is 5.56 out there, but again, you're going to be shooting more 22s for the rest of the year. I really believe it's going to be at least a year before we see any kind of normalization. And as I've said before, you know, based on what ammunition guys have told me, the normalization that you're going to see is not the normalization that you would like to see, because we've already proven what we will pay. So, in fact, I really have to force myself down into the basement this weekend and pull the lever on the big blue machines to start stacking up some more ammo here. I had about a two-week period where I just reloaded like a crazy person down in the basement. And so I stacked up all this ammo, and I felt pretty good about myself. I'm like, here's a few thousand of these, and here's a few thousand of these. And last weekend, I sort of checked the bins that where I had dumped the ammo in, the ammo cans that I dumped the ammo in, and I noticed they were almost empty. So I'm puzzled at how that happens. I guess we all end up firing more rounds than we actually think we end up firing. So this weekend, gosh, heaven help me, I'm going to be down in the basement. I'm going to be cranking out loads on the big blue Dillon machines, because those are absolutely my favorite reloaders. I mean, you already know that. That's because I come out of practical pistol. And I can tell you that when I got that first Dillon, was it a 400 or 450? It was like a revelation, because I've been reloading for IPSC. I've been reloading 45 ACP for shooting in practical pistol in IPSC on an RCBS Junior single-stage press. And so basically what that meant was that I spent most of my time reloading and not nearly very much of my time shooting. And the first Dillon changed that. It was like, oh, my goodness, look at this. It was a progressive press, and you still had to do weird things with the powder drop. The initial powder drops were more like the traditional RCBS or Hornady powder drops. I believe you had to turn a little knob or something like that. And I remember we finally got some sort of Rube Goldberg device to drop the powder. All I remember was a friend of mine sold it to me for like $15, and there were little wires and all sorts of things that you installed yourself. And it worked about 75% of the time, which means you had to be paying a lot of attention, because otherwise you had a lot of rounds that went when you wanted them to go bang. So all that is past us now, of course, the Dillon 550s, the Dillon 650s, or better yet, the Dillon 1050s, the commercial machines. And, of course, RCBS has their own progressive press. Lee has a progressive press. Hornady has a progressive press. It's the more you load, the more you shoot. And I wish I believed reloading was a sport in itself. My father did. My father used to tell me all the time, I would go out and he would be reloading 357s 20 rounds at a time. And this is when I was a kid. And I started reloading when I was 8 years old, helping him out dumping the powder. He had those little powder measures, those little, I think, Lee powder measures. And for just his everyday loads, we would be dumping them in with a little Lee measure into a little funnel. And he would say, you know, when you think about it, reloading is every bit as fun as shooting itself. No, actually not. It's a little bit like saying washing the dishes is every bit as much fun as cooking. But at least it's less painful with a progressive press, because we can put a lot more rounds together. Just for the record, just in case you're interested, in addition to the Dillon press, I usually use Dillon dies, because Dillon dies are set up to run on Dillon presses, which is a good thing. Typically, all my bullets are LaserCast. LaserCast is one of the promotional sponsors for the shows. And the reason that I approached them to be one of the sponsors for the shows, one of the bullet sponsors for the shows, is because I was using their stuff anyway. I mean, a great level of consistency within the laser cast bullets. So typically for Cowboy, I'll load 158 grain bullets. over something. For a while, I was using a couple of the Hogden powders that are running in short supply. So I'm going to be doing cowboy loads out of Red Dot, Snore Nod. And for my 44 cowboy loads, I'm using Unique, Snore Nod. That's because, like most people, I use Unique as a powder since I was 8. I believe those 357s we were loading them with Unique. Or if we really wanted them dirty, we were loading them with Bullseye. But so typically I'll use Unique for 44 Special, 44 mid-range, 44 Magnum coming up, and 45 ACP. You know, playing again. You know, I fall back on a Unique load that I've used for a long time. It's a little dirtier than it should be, but maybe my dies are frozen in that. For a long time, I had my old 450 Dillon press, and I'd used it a lot in Florida, out in an un-air-conditioned reloading room. And it was pretty much rusted in place. You couldn't adjust it or anything like that. And I sent it back to Dillon, and they fixed it for me. But they did say the dies were perfectly aligned, so why mess with anything at all? So roughly, that's what I usually do, bulk stuff. Remember I mentioned a few weeks ago that over the winter, one of the things I'm looking forward to doing over the fall, over the winter, when I can get out to the range, is I want to spend a little bit more time with 44 Magnum. So I'm really interested in heavy bullet loads. So I just today, in fact, came shipped to me today. I got 300 grain flat point 44 Magnum bullets from LaserCast, and I've also ordered some accurate powder AA9 number 9, which I've been told repeatedly is an excellent powder to use on heavy bullet loads in a 44 Magnum. So I'm looking forward to doing a little experimenting like that and just seeing what my guns like. What, you know, which ones of my 44 Magnum like what. I do like 300 grain loads just in principle. For cowboy, I'll load, again, within 44, 44 Special, 44 Magnum, I'll load 200 grain flat point nose. Everyday loads with 44 Magnums are generally 240 grain laser cast bullets, as opposed to the classic 250, 255 grain Keith loads. Anyway, so when I do those loads, when I put together some of those experimental loads, we'll talk about it here on the show. Hang on, quick plug here for the Outdoor Channel, In Whose Fields I Labor, and of course, who you watch every Friday night, Shooting Gallery Cowboys, the best defense survivals, best shooting shows on television. We'll be right back.
Length of shooting sports? Length to see the newest firearms before anyone else? Then there's only one place to be on Wednesday nights. Outdoor Channel, America's leader in outdoor TV.
As always, we want to mention our great sponsors on Downrange Television, Ruger Firearms, makers of great, totally cool guns like the SR-22 we talked about last week. Also, Perry USA, again, somebody we talk to on a really regular basis, makers of great 1911 platform pistols. Liberty Safes, America's number one safe manufacturer, and the maker of that great big steel box I have anchored in concrete in the basement. And my friends at Tactical Solutions, who are going to be rolling out a 22 conversion unit for that... Okay, excuse me, a little bad head cold there, sunk down in my chest. Okay, great guys. Again, support the people who support us. So what else is on my mind? You know, interesting, every so often, you know, when I can't sleep, and that, unfortunately, I think it's a function of traveling on the road all the time, but I was thinking of the last hotel room I was in, that I really needed to formalize the guns I took on the road on a regular basis, because, you know, we've talked about that before. I hate to take, like, my A-carry guns, my really guns I like, because the road's so darn hard on them. For example, I went to go out to the range to shoot some 44 Special, and I pulled out a Bulldog, Charter Arms Bulldog, you know, my Magnaport Bulldog, a really nice gun. And I noticed that in my last trip, somehow the front sight was broken off the gun. It's just the road's hard on guns, and there's nothing to be said for that. So I decided it made sense to really come up with what I think of as like Michael's carry package that I'm going to carry on the road all the time, which is good because it gives me something to think about in the wee hours of the morning. And so I started like going through the whole list. Okay, what am I going to carry? What's good? What's smart? And I thought actually the process, again, I like to kind of give you some kind of idea of the process I go to arrive at sometimes stupid conclusions, but at least they're my conclusions. So I thought, okay, what I want to carry, is a gun on the road, and I want to actually build up sort of a package that that I can take on the road. And the package would consist of the firearm, the gun itself, a carry system, ammo, and a storm case, some sort of plastic gun case, heavy duty case, that I would leave the gun in. You know, when I wasn't cleaning it or I didn't take it to the range, it would live in that case so that when I got ready to go to X, then all I would do is pick up the case and, you know, put the locks on it and go. So after much strange agonizing, I decided to do something fairly odd. I decided that what I would take on the road would be a revolver. And the reason for that is a double action revolver is my thinking is, well, a couple of them. Some of them are really like mundane. They always work. I don't have to worry about them as much. Another, like, this is a really silly reason, but for those of you who travel a lot with guns, every one of you will resonate with this statement, is it's a lot easier at 4 o'clock in the morning when you're getting ready to go to the airport to pick up the gun off the bedstead, pick up a revolver off the bedstead and dump 6 rounds of it, than sit around and feed rounds out of your magazines. So put them back in the case so that you can take them to the airport. Now, some airports now are letting people on or letting people check ammunition in magazines, but that is by no means consistent across the country. So from my own standpoint, again, going through a lot of different airports, I come down on the side of what's the most consistent thing I can do. Well, I know if I put the rounds back in a plastic box, a plastic ammunition box designed for ammunition, I have no trouble getting through the airport with that. So that's what I default to, which means that if I'm carrying a semi-auto, I'm like popping rounds in the magazine. A lot of times I do carry those Glocks. I carry, you know, one of the things we mentioned is a Glock 19 is a zero baseline gun. People at TSA see a lot of Glocks. They just come through by the bazillion. Nobody ever gives a Glock a second look. So I've typically carried a Model 19 or a little bitty Model 26. So I spend a lot of time thumbing rounds in magazines, and then at 4 o'clock in the morning I find myself thumbing rounds out of magazines, putting them in the little plastic case, putting the case in the box. So I said, well, if I got a revolver, and you know I have no shortage of revolvers here, that would work pretty good. So my next thing, okay, revolver. Which one? What kind? What caliber? And my initial response was, I don't know, some kind of .357. There must be some around here. And then I thought, no, what about a .44 Special? Because I truly love the round. I think it's no matter what you read in that issue of American Handgunner, in that article by Mike Venturino, who certainly knows better, who apparently drank about a quart of vinegar and wrote an article about how, oh, .44 Specials suck really hard. Yeah, sure. But they're great. It's a great cartridge. It's a great self-defense cartridge. It's a baseline cartridge. It's available in some of the smaller frames guns. And so I thought, okay, we'll do a .44 Special. Either a steel .44 Special or maybe one of the alloy frame Smith & Wesson .44 Specials. And I thought, wait, no, I have an idea. Why don't I bump up a notch to a .44 Magnum and use that darn Smith & Wesson 329 PD? And you all know I have this kind of love-hate relationship with the PD, partly because it occasionally doesn't work. I go back to something Hamilton Bowen said when I was up at Hamilton Bowen's place in Tennessee. Hamilton is certainly one of the greatest gunsmiths in the world. But Hamilton said, you know, you got to say absolutely that the 329 PD is one of the greatest 44 specials ever made that will also take 44 Magnums. It's a lightweight gun, I think in the 19-ounce region, something like that, which makes it just a vicious gun to fire with full recoil ammunition. But with 44 specials, it's a full-size gun, 4-inch barrel. I thought, wow, that's a good idea. And the only fly in that ointment is that the gun jams. The locking system, we've talked about that before, the internal locking system is fatally flawed. It's fatally flawed because in alloy frame guns, the recoil cycle, the recoil wave, the wave of recoil passing through the gun is enough to cause initially I thought that flag that comes up and says locked was not under spring tension, but it's under spring tension, but it's a teeny tiny itsy bitsy spring. And with that sharp recoil wave from a heavy bullet heavy load, heavy bullet in an alloy frame, it's going to cause that little flag to come flying up just enough to catch the hammer on the way down. And you end up with a situation, which we talked about before, we have on film, you'll be seeing that soon, of the gun locking up exactly with the hammer falling. So you got a situation with a live round underneath a tensioned hammer. That is bad juju. And as I said before, I think it takes three hands and a pet monkey to clear that jam. The smartest thing you could do is back the strain screw out on the frame, on the grip frame. There's that screw that tensions the mainspring. And at least on the ones that have the regular curved mainspring, not the coil springs, at least you can back that strain screw out, take the pressure off the hammer, and that's a safer way to approach it. But so I said, so Saturday morning, I'm sitting around and with nothing to do, so I went down to the gun room, gathered up some tools, gathered up the 329, and I performed an exorcism on it. Yes, you probably saw this on the Michael Bain blog, where if indeed I haven't insulted you this week, don't worry. I promise you, you are on the list. But I performed an exorcism on the 329, basically removing that stupid flag. So there's not a hole in the frame or anything. The locking mechanism is still in it, but it doesn't lock anything anymore. That flag that causes the gun to jam is now gone. So there's no problem with the gun anymore, and that is now my standard operating procedure for any Smith & Wesson revolver with the internal locking system. Now, I want to say right out, don't do this. Kids, don't do this at home. You're a crazy person if you do this. You're just a lunatic if you remove that lock. Keep in mind this, though. A lock is not a safety. Now, I am not saying, oh my God, disable a factory safety. A lock is not a safety. Save the flag. If you sell the gun, reinstall the lock. It's very simple. It can be done with a pair of tweezers and a little pointy thing. No problem at all. But you cannot sell the gun on which you've removed the lock, because then you're assuming the liability for that gun forever and ever and ever. And in some states, it's illegal to sell a gun without a lock. So you need to replace that internal lock, and whenever you sell a gun to somebody, which I've given up selling guns because I always feel bad after I sell them, because then I end up going out and getting another one just like it. Hang on for just one second. Let's put in a plug here for Crimson Trace, and then we'll be right back. We'll talk some more about flags.
I've been on the local police force for 10 years now. I've stayed away from different gadgets and gimmicks that were supposed to improve my shooting. A few months ago, when I was at the range, another officer was using Crimson Trace laser grips. I have to say, I was pretty skeptical at first. Well, he let me shoot his gun, and I couldn't believe how fast and accurately I could hit the target, even in unconventional positions. At that point, I became a true believer and bought a set for myself. They were simple to install and easy to use. Crimson Trace laser grips are not a cure-all, but when my life depends on it, that red dot clearly identifies my point of aim, especially in low-light conditions when most shootings occur. You could say it helps bad guys make informed decisions.
Get to your favorite gun shop and try a set today. Or contact Crimson Trace for a free catalog at the location of a dealer near you. Call 800-442-2406 or visit their website at crimsontrace.com.
Okay, so you guys are all on board with that, right? If you take out the internal lock of a Smith & Wesson, if you take out the internal lock of anything, of a Ruger, of a Taurus, that's fine as long as you keep the gun. But if you sell the gun, you must render it back to its original condition. You cannot sell a gun if you have rendered one of the locking devices inactive because of the risk of liability downstream from you. So anyway, I took out the flag. My 329 is now perfectly happy, perfectly viable, super deluxe little gun. And I thought, this is a perfect travel gun. And part of my thinking there, let's go to the main part of the thinking, which is how I travel. And it's not necessarily the way you travel. So you have to adapt this kind of thinking for how you might travel. But when I travel, mostly it's for filming. And the nature of that is that at crack of dawn, I'm going to go to the location. I'm going to stay at the location till all the light goes away. And then I'm going to drag my sorry butt to a restaurant, have a meal, go back to the hotel, and collapse. it's not like I'm doing a lot of hanging around, cruising around town where I might want a gun on my person. And a lot of times I'll carry a pocket pistol and have that if I'm going to be out and about. But mostly what I'm looking for is I'm looking for a gun in the car where I'm going to be traveling to and from the venue. And that, of course, the caveat here is where legal, where legal. Critical issue. You got to know the laws of the areas that you go to. I'm also looking for a gun in the hotel room, definitely. I definitely always want a gun in the hotel room. Sometimes I'm going to want to carry a big blaster. That's okay. I know how to do that. So, here's an interesting second thing, and this is going to sound a little weird, but again, if you travel a lot, I think you may buy into this a bit. One of the things I like to do when I get to the airport, especially I'm picking up my rental car out in the middle of nowhere, where, you know, your car is in Z780. It's just past, like, that mountain over on the left. So, one of the things I do, as soon as I get to the car, as soon as I can get to my luggage, take the gun out, load the gun. Because that's actually one of the, I think of as one of the points of my biggest risk there is in that garage area. And also driving to my hotel because, you know, I believe my GPS. I totally believe my GPS. My GPS would never, I love her. I know she won't lie to me. Sometimes she does. And I end up in middle of nowhere. I ended up one point in San Antonio in an area where I was pretty sure I was going to be killed and eaten. But again, one of the things that it was a hotel I'd never stayed in San Antonio before, and ended up in the middle of, like, you know, heaven's nowhere. But I also ended up in the middle of heaven's nowhere with a SIG 226 stuffed under my leg in the seat of the car. So I really wasn't that worried about being killed and eaten. But one of the things I found, it's a little bit harder to load a semi-auto in the car where you're trying to be inconspicuous because there's other people out there picking up their car. A little bit easier to load a revolver. So it's a small thing, but an important thing for somebody who travels a lot like me. So that was conclusion number one. I'm going to use the 329. I'm going to dedicate the 329 to being a travel gun. So what else do I need to make sure that is the ideal travel gun? First up are reloads. Want to make sure I have enough ammunition in that wheel gun, which is a real gun. So a couple of HKS speed loaders get dedicated to the project. Also a full pack of tough strips. Those speed strips you can put in 44 caliber ammunition. They're really great. Previously, the Bianchi speed strips were only for 38-357. So tough strips, you know, I've talked about them before. It's a great product. I got a bunch of them. So I've got then extra ammunition. Next item was I wanted to make sure I had enough options on how to carry the gun based on how I live on the road. So that actually opened up a kind of an interesting dialogue with myself. I said, self, how do you carry the gun when you're on the road? And well, the truth is usually whatever gun I've got on the road with me, I carry it in a safe packer. We've talked about Safe Packer from Wilderness Tactical before. The reason I do that is, remember we talked about I go to the location, gun's in the car. Like, I'll either bring the gun into the location and put it in a secured place. We got, you know, $250,000 in cameras around there, so we do have secured places. Or I lock the gun in the trunk of the car. In any case, that means I'm taking it out of the car, taking it to somewhere. So when I got the gun in the car, if it's legal, again, that caveat, if it's legal, I like Safe Packers for moving the gun around. And I also discovered that well, rather than, say, put a gun in a holster, if I'm really exhausted, I'm stopping off at a restaurant, I'm going to get something to eat, on the way back to the hotel, it's just as easy to pick the Safe Packer up and carry it in with me. Again, no one's ever stood up and screamed, oh my God, he's got a gun. Not even in Planet Boulder, the People's Republic of Boulder. Safe Packers are, for all intents and purposes, invisible. So my number one thing to have with me for any gun I'm going to carry on the road is a Safe Packer. And then I started thinking, well, there's some other options there, some other things that I might want to look at. So I fished around and pulled out a Kydex holster. Belt holster, not an IWB, but a regular belt holster for a 4-inch in-frame revolver from Brian Hoffner. We've talked about Brian before, a law enforcement officer, great holster maker, great trainer. And I said, okay, well, you know, if I want to put it on my belt and I want to cover it with a vest, some kind of concealment garment, Well, that's easy enough. I could just put it on my belt, cover it with the vest. No problem. So I added that to it, and I thought, well, okay, one more. What the heck? Why don't I buy something else? I got in touch with Robert at Survival Sheath Systems. Now, we've talked about, I have a chest holster for 44 Special Smith & Wesson, small frame Smith & Wesson, and it's great holster. Survival Sheath System makes some really innovative holsters. And so I thought, well, maybe a shoulder holster, because a lot of the things that I might wear on the road, or especially in the winter where, you know, we're traveling a lot, we're traveling with heavy jackets, a shoulder holster in an area where I can carry kind of fits the bill. It's a good transit holster. So I call Robert, and we talked about a shoulder holster. He's going to make me up a shoulder holster for 4-inch end frame. And again, the 329 doesn't weigh that much, so it's not that much of an issue. And on the flip side of the holster, you know, obviously it guns on one side, the other side of the holster to balance it out. I've got Robert suggested a holder for two tough strips with 44 Magnum, 44 Special ammunition in it. And I also asked for a knife sheath for Columbia River Knife and Tool, one of their little rescue knives. I forget exactly the name of it, but it's essentially designed not so much as a fighting tool as a rescue tool, designed for firefighters, designed for police. It's got kind of a wedge chisel blade, very much looks like sort of some sort of tanto type blade, but it's a 3-inch blade. It's legal almost everywhere, fixed blade knife, and he goes, perfect. So we're going to set that system up, and I'll just, you know, again, leave the knife and leave the reloads in there, in that particular holster. So I've got basically three ways of carrying the gun. A traditional belt holster. And hey, if you're in Arizona, that's cool. It's an open carry state. And in the other state, generally I have a vest, a jacket, some sort of Hawaiian shirt. It'll work. You can carry that gun there. Or if I chose to spend another dime or so, I could go back to Brian Hoffner. Brian Hoffner has a fascinating IWB system for large frame revolvers. It's really a neat, it's called a minimalist holster. And, you know, I might go back and look at purchasing one of those holsters from Brian, but I've already got the basic belt holster. So that gives me a lot of options there. Next issue was ammo. And, you know, here's the truth. One of the truth, 44 Special Winchester silver tips. I got a lot of silver tips, 200 grain silver tips. I've also got a lot of Corbin DPX 200 grain deep penetrators. Alternately, generally the gun started loading with silver tips because they're a little softer in terms of recoil than even the DPXs. And then the reloads are all DPXs. I'll probably keep at least, I don't know, 20, 44 Magnum rounds, real thumpers in there. You know, one never knows, does one? The idea is I build this whole system into a storm case, a Hardage storm case. That's my choice because unlike some of the other brands, the way the Hardage cases lock, if you take them and throw them across the runway, as I have seen one of my gun cases thrown, they don't pop open. And believe me, you don't ever want a gun case to pop open. They are darn durable cases. So, you know, I'm going to go ahead and get a Hardage storm case and dedicate it to this gun. Now, I've got, I figure I'll have 50 rounds of ammunition with me, a box of 50. Some of those will be in the strips, if I can put the strips in a plastic box. The actual heavy 44 Magnum rounds, the thumpers, you can get small flat boxes made especially for hunters that'll hold like 10, 20 rounds, usually like 20 rounds of 44 Magnum, 44 Special. So I'll separate those out in a different box. They'll be in the flat case box. So it's really easy for me to tell what's what in there. The only other thing I thought I might add, and it sort of depends on how my paranoia is doing, whether it's going up or down, whether it's hot, burning hot, or it's in remission, is I consider a rifle option. And we've talked about that off and on before. And, you know, it's been one of the most controversial things we've ever talked about here on the podcast, which I find really odd. And, you know, at least a friend of mine spends all his time. Whenever he's anywhere, he's always got a Robinson Arms in a cello case. I mean, so I'm not alone. I'm in a small crowd, but definitely not alone. But I sort of like the idea of a rifle option just to have the gun. If it's not an issue of carrying it, have it with me. So how would I address a rifle option with what I've already chosen? Well, what I would do is go to a lever action 44 Magnum rifle. And an advantage of that is in some place like California, or in New Jersey, or states where there's issues, when they've got lots of issues in dealing with high capacity assault, fill in the blank, do this, do that, do this. A lever action rifle is a slam dunk. And because I am a cowboy action shooter, I shoot lever actions a lot. It's a gun I'm intimately familiar with. You saw it last season on Shooting Gallery. It's a gun that's a very viable tool. So I'm thinking about maybe a Model 92 Winchester and 44 Magnum, something maybe from Legacy Sports, something from Chiapa, which I guess supplies Legacy, or something from Cimarron, which I think also gets them from the same pipeline. But maybe one that would be either a breakdown model or one of the shorter barrels that both companies make, Chiapa makes a 16-inch barreled 44 Magnum lever rifle that, you know, when you pop the stock off of, you don't have much gun there. And if I size the Storm case just right, I could have a broken down lever action rifle there. And how often am I likely to need it? Probably never. On the other hand, if I ever do really need it, and what's the advantage of a rifle over the handgun? Number one, let's say that would change a little bit of the ammunition I carried. That means I would carry 20 rounds of a thumper. Something, a serious, what I would think of as a serious hunting load. The 250 grain Winchesters, for example, partitioned gulls, or some of the Buffalo Bore heavy 44 Magnum loads, or the Garrett heavy 44 Magnum loads. There's the Corbin Hunters, the 300 grain Corbin Hunters, which will, you know, any of these rounds will rattle the fillings out of your teeth, you know, out of a handgun. But out of a long gun, not so much. You're going to get some recoil, but it's not going to be that big a deal. And, you know, that gives you the option of shooting a very powerful, you know, a cartridge that's pretty much good for you know, up to elk size game in the, you know, in the United States. It's a powerful cartridge, and it's going to be a lot easier to shoot it than out of a handgun, although you still have that option with a rifle handgun, same caliber. The other thing is it a little easier for long range shooting? If I want to take a 50-yard shot, if I'm in some situation where I need to shoot a long way away, I want a rifle. A third thing is the cool thing about a lever action rifle is once you've run it for a while, you've been in cowboy action shooting for a while, you can keep them fed. You can keep a lever action rifle running all day long. Is it going to be as fast as an AR? No, it's not. But you know, it's not that far off. And same thing, as long as you have rounds, you can keep the gun fed. So what situations would I need on the road a rifle? Not many. An example, though, is if I am in my hotel room in Los Angeles, you know, and somebody is pounding on my door saying, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to kill you, keep away from my wife, even though you're alone in the hotel room, someone has the wrong room. And you know, this has happened to me. It's happened more than once. You'd be surprised at how often, if you travel constantly, sooner or later somebody wants in your hotel room very badly. And yes, I pick up the phone, I call 911, I call the front desk, I do all the things correctly. But none of those things will save my butt. Hotel room doors are not the greatest in the world. Somebody can get in. And so, you know, if I'm in a place that's very anti-gun, and I'm in a place that has rigid laws on handguns, but not so rigid laws on rifle, and somebody is kicking down my door, I think I'm going to take the rifle and shoot them with it, rather than shoot them with the handgun. Why? Because it's just going to be easier for me in court. It's going to be easier when I fight the next battle. I shot him with a lever action rifle that I had on the road with me for target shooting. I'm a cowboy action shooter. I like to practice. I might even be dry firing in my room, you know? So there's a reason there. In a social dislocation situation, like we talked about for a whole season on the Best Defense Survival, you know, we've talked about riot situations before. If I am leaving a city that is having social dislocations, and believe me, if I'm in a city that has a social dislocation, I want to go home. I am going to have a rifle with me if I'm driving. Why? Because I want all the firepower I can get. Simple truth. So those are a couple of options there that you might go to a rifle. And I'm not 100% on this because I don't have a breakdown 44 Magnum, 44 Special rifle, and they're darn hard to find, and when you do find them, they are expensive. So I'm looking at a couple of other options. I want to do some measuring in my basement before I actually order the hard case, before I order the storm case, the Hardage storm case. And that might be kind of cool, you know? So, and especially if I have it fixed, and if, you know, usually I'm checking one bag, and if I'm not checking a bag, a gun's a moot point. But generally, if I'm going to be there longer than overnight, I'm checking one bag anyway. Might as well just check the gun bag. Check it as well. You know, or you take the gun bag. It's not going to be a huge case. It's not going to be like a massive manly case. But as small a case as I can take and dedicate to this gun, drop it inside one of my larger suitcases. You got to check a suitcase. It don't make no difference to check a size larger. You got to pay a little extra. Pay a little extra. Worth it. Absolutely worth it. So that way I'll have a dedicated carry system, one that I'm comfortable with, one that I'm used to, with a significant caliber, a gun that I know is going to deliver the mail if it's necessary. So anyway, that's my thinking. And that's sort of like the logical sequence you might need to go through. If you're traveling, is what kind of gun do I need to travel with? You know, yeah, you can say, I'm going to just travel with my carry gun and I'm going to do, well, you know, Michael had a point there. I'm going to travel with my carry gun, but maybe to move that gun around, I need a safe packer. And maybe I need an alternative carry system because when I'm traveling, generally, you know, I might be in different clothes than when I'm lounging around my house, hanging around my hometown. So anyway, those are just to give you some ideas of how you might run a logical string to figure out what you're going to do. And, of course, we're now way out of time. I'm not out of town, actually, but we are filming Best Defense. We're doing some of the hand-to-hand. We're doing knife and stick this year. Go to the Michael Bain blog and check out some of the pictures that we're posting kind of on a daily basis as we film. But why don't we get back to, like, oh, gosh, why don't we get back to Disco Inferno? And maybe I can go look around and go on eBay. You know, I bet eBay, you can order a white suit from eBay. And you know what? Your kids would think you were insane. And that's probably a good thing. Every so often, they probably do need to think mom and daddy are insane. So, I am Michael Bain. This is Downrange Radio. As always, thank you for taking the time to join me this week. And until next week, where I think I'm at Blackwater next week. But anyway, U.S. Training Center used to be Blackwater. Until next week, regardless of where you are, stay safe out there.